This is a Schrutbuck. When you have done something good, you will receive one Schrutbuck. 1,000 Schrutbucks equals an extra 5 minutes for lunch.
Right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again talking some more season 40, and I'm excited because joining me to do so is Dom. Dom, how are you?
There sounds like a surprise.
Well, it's been a little while. How have you been doing?
It has been like 2 weeks or whatever. It's really not been whatever you're making it out to be, but I'm doing good, and I wish that we were in here to talk about season 40 once again, yet again, dear God, yet again. Under better circumstances, but this is like that old journalistic conflict of interest situation where you kind of want something to fail because then it gives you more to talk about, and I don't want the season to fail. I'd rather that the twists we're going to be mentioning today weren't even in the discussion here, but because they are, we have something to rant podcast about.
Right, and just for the record, I know it hasn't been that long since we've been talking, but at least since the last time we've talked about season 40, I have done many other drafts subsequently, so for me, it feels like the first time in a while that I've been talking to Dom about season 40, but for anyone interested, I have done a few drafts in the last couple of weeks. I don't remember which lines up with whom. Let me see. I did the Challenge Beast draft against Austin. I did
Hashtag no one cares about your draft 2019. I think we can safely move on. But suffice to say, your point is well taken. You have been fully enmeshed in the season 40 draft world, and I hope that whatever combination of 7 different outcomes ends up happening, that you end up on the right side of things when all is said and done.
Well, just to quickly get into, in case anyone missed it, the other drafts that they may find worth checking out, the Comp Beast draft against Austin is over on the patron feed, but up on the main feed, I did a 0-vote finalist draft against Brian Scally and a fewest votes against draft with Matt Ligori. So if any of that sounds interesting to you, if you still can't get enough season 40 content, definitely do go and check those out. But Dom, I'm excited to have you back in here today. No draft going on, at least that I know of at this point, but we have a lot of news that has come out over the last couple of weeks. I've touched on it in a couple of those podcasts with the various guests, but I've really been looking forward to coming in and talking with you about all that we have found out from Redmond, of course, over at Inside Survivor, for what is going to be in store for Survivor Season 40. So unless you have anything else that you feel would be worth flagging up, I am ready to dive in.
I'm ready to dive in too. Let's do it.
All right. So I would say the most prominent piece of news, and also probably the twist that is going to have the biggest impact on the season, although maybe not, but, fingers crossed, hopefully not. We have found out, Dom, that Edge of Extinction is coming back for Survivor 40. So I will begin by asking you, there was a lot of speculation about this being a possibility, but I was always someone who, maybe this was just wishful thinking, but I was convincing myself, with a cast this incredible, there's really no need for that. But I think, of course, we are seeing that it will be back, and I understand there are plenty of reasons why that may be the case. But just how surprised were you to actually see that this was returning?
Well, I was always on the other side of things there, where if you have a cast that's incredible, why not, from the producer's standpoint, have a twist like this so that if you lose one of your many, many heavy hitters early, that you get to see them for the duration of the season anyway. And ever since I heard someone float the idea that Edge of Extinction seemed kind of weird as a twist, but what if that season or that twist being used in season 38 is just a dry run for season 40, I was very attached to that idea. It seemed so obviously what they might be going for. And then you talked me off the ledge. I let you convince me that that wasn't going to be the case. And it seemed like, based on all of these circumstantial clues that we had and reports from Redmond before this and other people too, that this actually wasn't the case. That season 40 was going to be by the books, insofar as a season like that could ever be by the books. And then Redmond drops his bombshell on us that, of course, Edge of Extinction is back, and we were dumb for thinking otherwise the entire time. So As always, I kind of wish I hadn't let you talk me into your way of thinking, and that I'd been incredibly stubborn the whole time, and I would have been much more emotionally ready for this news.
Well, I think we were correct in one sense, in saying Edge of Extinction only exists in the first place on season 38 to keep the returnees on screen, and I think primarily to make sure Joe has a chance at winning on finale night. And I would say that is essentially the same thing that is happening here. I was just less inclined to believe that they would feel compelled to use that logic in a cast this huge. But it really does seem to me, Dom, like this is one of many things that is primarily in place to make sure Boston Rob stays on TV and has a chance on finale night.
Or that Boston Rob and Amber as a unit get to have some kind of storyline going into the finale, or that really take your pick of the other people gets to at least have their voice going into the endgame. So really not surprised to see this, and I wish I could take myself back 2 or 3 months to when I was certain that, of course, this was just a test for season 40, because I think I would have been in a more objective frame of mind about it, but I don't actually hate it, I think. Am I going crazy here? Have I succumbed to Stockholm Syndrome over this twist, or am I actually onto something?
So I am really trying to mentally leave the door open for this to, at the very least, not like destroy a season the same way that it did on season 38, but I am genuinely trying to talk myself into some way that this could actually be a good thing. Does anything jump to mind, Dom, about this having equity to improve the season, or are you just hoping that we can limit the damage?
Oh, nothing comes to mind for me. I was just hoping that maybe you had thought of something that you can now convince me that I was going crazy the entire time. The big issue, I think, just fundamentally with the twist is that it removes any of that dramatic tension from the episodes. So even with Redemption Island, which also had that same issue, you at least had that delay to the next week, where if someone got voted out in this insane blindside, then you want that to have some finality to it. You want that to be the end of the game for them, and this removes that. But at least with Redemption Island, you get to see them come back in next week, and maybe they lose, or maybe they go on a run, and then when they finally lose, their story does come to an end, and you get that moment, and it's not the same kind of finality, but it is some kind of finality. Whereas with this, you really get none of that at any point. So to use one example that came up during the season, if you were an Aubrey fan, for instance, you see Aubrey maybe start to possibly turn her fortunes around, and she gets she has the idol find with the music in the background, and it seems like this could be the start of something great for her, and then she suffers this brutal blindside, and the brutality of that is neutered to such a great degree, because you know she's just going through this revolving door and going back to Edge of Extinction, and then when the time finally comes for her Edge of Extinction story to end, it's not her story, it's 7 different people's stories all ending at the same time, and it feels like they're just being shuffled out of the shot so that the one person who comes back can rightfully receive the focus there. So if you are heavily invested in a character on the season, whether for better or for worse, it's hard for that to really amount to anything now, because when their time comes for them to leave the show, it's going to be in this queue with 5 other people, and you won't even get to hear from them, probably.
I think that is a very fair concern when approaching this show from the perspective that we do, or that pretty much anyone listening to this does. I think in practice, and I have a hard time faulting the producers for feeling this way, the average casual fan will view the Edge of Extinction twist as a complete free roll, essentially. Like, as long as Boston Rob can stay in the main game, awesome. But at least when he gets voted out, I still get to see him every week, and he's still going to be in the mix on finale night. And I think that is something they consider a very good thing, where I don't think, frankly, the casual fan has that same urgency for a sense of like finality with a vote off. I think they would gladly trade that finality for the knowledge that Boston Rob is still going to be on their TV every week. And to go back to some of the like pros from the first time of Edge of Extinction, I did think it was extremely cool that for pretty much the first time ever, we really got to hear from people on the TV episodes, like the morning after they just got blindsided. And that was a unique angle that I think will still be very interesting this time around as well. And I think it shares the same kind of disparity where the casuals will love that sort of thing and not really mind that this person, you know, the sense of finality doesn't exist in terms of people's games actually ending. But for the more hardcore fans, I would say, as cool as we may find it to see how people react to being blindsided, it is not a worthwhile trade-off.
Yeah, and this desire for finality, this might just be like the semi-professional theater critic in me jumping out, and that, you know, most of the viewers understandably don't care one iota about all of that. So that's a fine perspective to have too. But the other point that you mentioned about actually getting to hear from people the morning after, where we just, there's never been a vehicle for that in the traditional format for the show. I don't recall you ever making that point as Edge of Extinction the season was airing, but it's a very good one, I think, and one that I think needs more appreciation.
Well, you should have listened, because we definitely made that point as Edge of Extinction was airing, but I understand that you just blocked me out at this point.
It's possible I was just in my own world whenever you whenever you took your turn there, but I think that is a valuable point, and it's one which I wish they acknowledge more explicitly and did more with, because at the moment it feels like when someone is voted out, they get sent to Edge of Extinction, they have the obligatory confessional the morning after, which often does have some interesting insight into it, but sometimes doesn't, and then they just disappear for a few episodes. They reappear to maybe go on some contrived scavenger hunt on Edge of Extinction to find an advantage that they can, for some reason, send to someone who's back in the main game, and then they disappear again until the next challenge comes up, and that just doesn't feel complete. I don't know what new dimension that's adding to their story.
The one thing that makes me hopeful, and this is something the whole community has been praying for a long time, but for as far as I can remember, the first time really ever, it seems like there may actually be some legs to this. I have heard it at least floating out there that we may be in store for 90-minute episodes for, I would imagine, only this one season of Survivor, and I would at least be willing to leave the door open for Edge of Extinction if that is what it takes to get us to that point, because I know plenty of the extra time is going to be spent on Edge of Extinction, and maybe this take is going to age horribly, but I can't imagine a whole third of the episode is going to be spent on Edge of Extinction too much, at least when there's anything really interesting going on in the main game. I'm sure we'll get our obligatory shots of Boston Rob and potentially Amber on a weekly basis, but I would consider that, despite all of my concerns about what an Edge of Extinction twist can do to the main game, if that is what it takes to get us 90-minute episodes, I would almost at least, I would entertain the possibility that that is a trade-off worth making, if, as I'm trying to find some sort of pros for Edge of Extinction being back.
And if there is nothing interesting going on in the main game, then just cancel Survivor right there and then, because I don't know how else you're going to get a more interesting season with a cast like this. But yeah, I see what you're saying. The issue for me is the one that I've highlighted time and time again with the international versions of Survivor, so ranging from New Zealand to Australia to South Africa, where by and large they have extra time to work with. They have more time on an episode and more episodes to play around with, and yet they don't seem to be making that much better use of that time. So it ends up just being more of the same, or the pacing starts to lag and suffer because they can allow it to lag. And the American version has always felt more sleek and snappy than the international version, so it might be very interesting to see what they do when they have 90 minutes, let's say, instead of 60. But if that is a trade-off, I think it is pretty much a one-for-one trade-off. I think it is a wash. Like, we get Edge of Extinction, and in return we get more time, but that time is going to be misdirected at best and possibly just thrown into the void altogether. So I'm not too excited for that, but any more Survivor is better Survivor as far as I'm concerned. I'll gladly take whatever they're happy to offer me.
Yeah, I think one issue that I have found, and frankly one of my only complaints about the international Survivor seasons that are currently airing, which for my money have been much better than most of the recent CBS seasons, is when they get the 55-minute episodes without commercials, as opposed to the U.S. where it's always 42 minutes without commercials, or on Australian Survivor, they have like three episodes a week that run for an hour and 15 minutes without commercials. At least in the case of the currently airing Survivor South Africa, it seems like a lot of what they're choosing to fill that time with is an extra reward challenge and then people off on the reward, which is just never going to interest me. And I would imagine is not interesting you too much, whereas they could easily be doing other things with that extra time that I think would make it clear how much better it is.
And there are a few ways you can approach having that extra time to work with. So you could say, the existing formula we have works well. Our approach to it basically is sound, except we have to cut stuff off from around the edges sometimes. And what we could do is fill in that extra time with stuff that would otherwise end up on the cutting room floor. And so the characters who maybe would otherwise have to take a backseat in this episode get to have their voice heard when they wouldn't normally. Or they could say, given that what we do already basically works, why not just do more of that? So if our existing script for the episode has Boss and Rob getting 22 confessionals, let's just scale that up for the full 90 minutes so that he has 33 confessionals instead. Like, I could honestly see that going either way.
I don't see... I have to imagine Russell and Samoa is the number one... or maybe Boston Rob in Redemption Island. One of those two has to have the most confessionals in a given season. Even with 90-minute episodes, I would imagine no one's going to touch either of those. I believe Russell was at like 108. I want to say I remember that because it was like a lost number. And then Natalie's confessional count was also either 15 or 16, some other lost number. And then Boston Rob, I think, may have even hit like 120 in Redemption Island. Something just completely insane, although that may be his total number of days played that I am confusing with his confessional count there. But even with extra time and the knowledge that they are probably going to lean heavily on the Boston Rob button, I can't imagine someone's going to monopolize the airtime to anything close to that extent, right? Or is that just, again, wishful thinking on my part?
You may well be tempting fate here, and so if that happens, I will blame you, but I hope so. I hope that they show your attitude to that.
All right. And do you see scenarios where you find yourself excited about someone returning into the game from Edge of Extinction beyond the reason of, oh, somehow Tony won the challenge and I'm excited to have him specifically back in the main game? Do you see game dynamics where you're going to be rooting for an Edge of Extinction person to be in there to mix things up?
The most likely one for me is if either Rob or Amber is in the main game, the other one comes back from Edge of Extinction, and yet neither of them goes on to win. Because if one of them goes on to win, especially the one who came back, that really is going to cheapen it all for me. But the romantic in me would like that storyline of they get reunited just at this final moment before their final fate in the game meets them.
So one thing that I talked about, I believe, with Brian Scally, although I think this was something we realized like moments after we hung up the call, but then figured out that Edge of Extinction probably really hurts Amber the most. And I'm curious to hear your take on how it affects some of these various players. And the rationale for that was by the time, assuming there are two re-entries again, by the time we hit the merge, at the very least, people will be aware that Edge of Extinction is back in play, and who in their right mind could ever leave Amber in the game, knowing Boston Rob is one challenge away from re-entering at Final Six with a whole prize pack full of goodies?
Yeah, in theory, it shouldn't matter, because if you have the numbers there to vote out Amber, then by the time Rob can come back, if it's just Romba as a pair together, then they wouldn't have the votes to overthrow anybody else. But at the same time, it means that, you know, even if Boss and Rob doesn't end up conveniently, miraculously finding some kind of advantage, then what if Amber does, right? Or what if Amber comes into that Final Six or Final Five round with something in her back pocket that she can use to benefit the two of them as a pair? So I think you're right. Knowing that Boss and Rob is at least in the mix to come back, and not knowing anything else that they could have between them, then yeah, it seems like absolute lunacy to let Amber get any further than you have to.
I would not be surprised, truly, if it is specifically Boston Rob returning at Final Six, they give him a Tyler Perry idol. Like, I think the production favoritism towards Boston Rob will know no bounds. And I was thinking about it in terms of James Holzhauer from Jeopardy. Obviously, the producers recognized how valuable it was to keep James on the show and would understandably, you know, even though it's costing them like $100,000 a day in his cash winnings, it's so good for the ratings to have him in the mix there. And I think the line they would never cross is like manipulating the daily doubles or whatever in terms of, okay, this will be a daily double if James is the one who is in control of the board, and will not be a daily double if someone else is in control of the board, because we really need James getting the daily doubles. I feel like the Survivor producers have no reservations about doing exactly that sort of thing this time around, and whatever help they can give Boston Rob will be a no-brainer on their end.
Yeah, you had this similar dynamic come up with Redemption Island in the first Blood vs. Water season, but this time around, that can only really come up for exactly Rob and Amber. But do you think there could be any other twist there with any other pair or group of players that we're not considering yet?
As far as people in the main game being nervous about one right. half of a pair returning, I think just the general Boston Rob circle will potentially be kind of at a greater risk. Like, I would feel much worse about leaving, for instance, like Tyson still in the game, or vice versa, leaving Rob in the game knowing Tyson could return from Edge of Extinction. I don't have at this hour a super strong sense of any other kind of like tight pre-gaming bonds that people would be too nervous about, although I would be floored if out there on the island there weren't tons of concerns about any given combination.
And knowing as well that there is this advantage pipeline between Edge of Extinction and the main game, any member of that minority alliance who sneaks in and is the like the last man or last woman standing has to be viewed with even more suspicion, right? So I don't know if Danny, for instance, can repeat what she did the first time around, because if you know, if Gary is able to just send her a Tyler Perry idol from Edge of Extinction, then her threat profile is considerably higher.
Right. And I mean, I know I flagged up Amber as being the person who, for my money, suffers the most from Edge of Extinction coming back. But does any particular player type stand out to you as the ones who should be particularly disappointed to see this now that everyone just watched what Chris Underwood did on 38, and I don't know if that necessarily means the overall vibe is going to be preventing the Chris Underwood type from like running the table again, and if people are going to be particularly nervous about the second re-enterer this time around, or if it means that the people who are probably less likely to be able to pull that sort of thing off are just getting their equity killed.
Yeah, I imagine it makes it even harder for the Denise Stapley types to, right. to navigate their way to the end without something just being thrown in to blow up their game from outside. But I don't think that's a new threat. It's more just exaggerating a threat that already exists even more than it should.
Yeah. So anyone stand out to you in terms of who should be really excited to see Edge of Extinction back besides Boston Rob?
Okay, well, you took the obvious answer out of my mouth there, but the Tyson's Apostle of the world, or the Tyson Apostles, which I know you are one of, who else comes to mind? Because you can just list everyone who roughly fits the same profile as Tyson, but like Adam Klein, for instance, does he, or like, Yule, do they have any particular reason to care? Or like, you can just list off all these different winners, but outside of the fan favorite athletic alpha male types, are there any character profiles you think stand to gain from this?
Nothing, you know, we've only seen this play out once, and maybe after a second iteration, some other, in retrospect, very obvious condition will make itself known. But now that Tyson has come, so nothing really jumps out to me at this moment, but now that you've mentioned Tyson, this is actually the very first takeaway I had when I heard Edge of Extinction was coming back, or very other than fucking kill me, was I actually think I would at least be very impressed, and maybe it would not be the best move, but in the case of specifically Tyson Apostle or some other, maybe like Jeremy or someone who could feel pretty good about their chances in these endgame challenges and at making fire. I know Tyson has over for years and years at this point said he can make a fire on Survivor faster than anyone else in the world. I think it would be very compelling, given that they just watched season 38 play out, if someone like Tyson finds himself in a precarious situation in the main game where he's not seeing a lot of paths to victory organically, if he essentially, one way or another, tries to get himself sent to Edge of Extinction so he can win his way to the end and then at Final Tribal Council, and this is crucial, pitch it as 4D chess. Say, I did this on purpose. I saw what happened the first time. Edge of Extinction is the place to be. I know I'm a beast in these challenges. I know I can make fire faster than anyone. Give me my $2 million now because I just completely changed what Survivor is as a game.
Yeah, Tyson can say, look, in Blood vs. Water, I did my best to get myself kicked out of the game in Final 7 for no reason. Now, I actually did it, and I came back, and the chain that I set in motion 6 years ago has finally come to fruition, and how can you not reward me for that?
I genuinely think there could be something to, maybe not even on this season, but if Edge of Extinction, God forbid, returns on future seasons of Survivor, I think we will eventually get to the point where someone, whether they did it on purpose or not, if they were the returnee from Edge of Extinction, pitches it as 4D chess at Final Tribal Council. I think that could be the like natural evolution of the way this is going.
Yeah, Sandra's going to rock out there and say, look, I tried to get myself voted out so I could win my way back in and make all these good relationships with the Edge of Extinction people, but none of you ever voted me out, so you failed once again, and here I am, here to claim a third title. Like, there's definitely a lot of ways you can pitch it.
I wish I hadn't just stumbled upon this thought, Dom, but we've seen it on 38. We're seeing it again here on 40. I know you were chalking that up to this has been in the mix all along for season 40, and 38 was just a test run. And this is really, this being Edge of Extinction, is serving to protect our investment in all of these big time characters that we're playing, that we're paying a ton of money to come back. We want to get 14 episodes out of them. But depending on how this goes, you know, even having seen pretty much universal disapproval for Edge of Extinction the first time around, do you think that this could become maybe not a staple of Survivor going forward, but at least something they return to after season 40? Over under 0.5 seasons beyond 40 that also include Edge of Extinction.
This is all assuming that there is Survivor beyond season 40, first of all. But I think if it does come back, it's going to be specifically for full returning player seasons where they want to, as you say, protect their investment. I think they were so dissatisfied with how season 38 played out that they don't want to risk that happening unless they have to. And I think they see a returning player season as something which magnifies all the advantages and removes all the disadvantages. Mm-hmm. So you don't have a Chris Underwood who no one knows or really cares about going out third and then coming back to win the entire thing. If someone makes the equivalent journey, it's someone who has already played at least one full season of Survivor and who we have reason to care about based on that, even if on this season they really haven't done too much.
Who is the worst case scenario person for them going on a Chris Underwood run here?
A
couple names stand out to me, but the one in terms of both plausibility of it happening and also just full confidence that 98%+ of the audience will have no memory of this person, I feel like Yule may be their worst case scenario.
How do you figure that?
Just because he played so long ago, wasn't really a standout personality, to say the least, at the time. And if Yule ends up being, you know, one of the people who is least recognizable in this cast, goes out on day 8, and then is just chilling on Edge of Extinction for 28 days or whatever before winning a couple challenges and making a fire or not to make it into the finals, I feel like he is one of the only candidates to be someone the vast, vast majority of the audience would just have no vested interest in on finale night.
Here's a question for you. Is Yule also the most likely person to quit if he ends up going to Edge of Extinction?
I don't remember which podcast.
What's the point, right? Like, of all the people out there, it feels like he has a great life to go back to, probably sacrificed a lot to be there in the first place, which maybe he would spin that as, well, why not stay here for as long as I can then, given that all of that is a sunk cost already. But I could see him saying, like, I'm not as invested in this as everyone else seems to be. Why not just take the free vacation instead of just wasting away on an island for 25 days?
Yeah, the people... in some previous podcast that came up in this capacity were Yule, and I believe Ethan was the other one, of like, this is clearly not even close to the same game that I played the first time around. I would much rather go on a vacation than hang out here only to not re-enter.
Yeah, although I do agree with you that Yule, it, just in terms of the optics for production, is the worst possible outline for that. Although, as a fan of, like, Socratic debate or whatever, I kind of want to see Yule get to the end having been propelled there by Edge of Extinction, because he will give us the best possible argument for Edge of Extinction as a twist, or as someone who would deserve to win despite, or maybe because of, having gone through that pipeline. Like, if you want the best argument for any of those things, then hope that Yule gets to the end, because that's the way you'll get them.
I actually do kind of hope that the Edge of Extinction person makes it to Final Tribal Council again, just to find out how susceptible this jury is to the same line of thinking that I think defined the season 38 people, of course Edge of Extinction is an equally valid path through the game, and Chris had to work really hard going out there getting the fish and making fire and being nice to everyone when there was absolutely no reason not to do any of those things. I would be very curious to see if an all-star jury handles that any differently, and let me state for the record, I do not see that being the case. I think all-star juries are just as inclined to take things on a personal level come Final Tribal Council time than any other jury.
Would it be more or less reassuring for you if the Edge of Extinction person comes back and wins? Because it might confirm that there is something fundamentally broken with this twist, and it's not just the Edge of Extinction cast or jury that should take the blame for all of that. But then at the same time, it would mean that if that is so predictable, then they took this amazing concept, this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for a season like this, and ruined it by adding in a twist, which you know is going to end up having this dramatic, cataclysmic impact on the season if that person ends up making the finals.
Right. I, as a thought experiment, I would be very interested in seeing that play out, but that to me would probably be the worst case scenario in most timelines for how this could all end up going.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm sure some other things on Edge of Extinction may come up along the way, Dom, but let's hit a couple of these other twists. And the next place I want to go is actually to a twist that we have been screaming about, just pleading for them to implement for years at this point. And despite being a little nervous just based on the implementation of other twists recently, I am still overall pretty excited about the possibility of this in-game currency twist that we've heard about changing things for the better. So what has been your general takeaway to this point on that?
So I think it might be best if you explain this quickly for the listeners at home, because this is a more complicated twist than the others, which are fairly self-explanatory.
Okay, so it may be easier if you correct me as I explain the basics of this, but from my understanding, everyone gets some sort of set bankroll, and it's unclear at this hour if they're able to pool money buy items as a group, or what the scoop is, or how much things are going to cost, or anything along those lines. But one way or another, everyone's going to have like Probst bucks to use over the course of the season, and we know they can buy comfort items and also advantages within the game. So while the details remain unclear at this point, I believe there's some element also of like willing your leftover money to someone else when you get voted out, or so, something like that. I'm sure we'll have more information when the time comes, but on the whole, having seen the genius and the way that Garnets function on that show, which prompted us to be begging for this kind of Survivor in-game currency in the first place, I do think that if implemented well, this could be a revolutionary kind of concept for the show to the same extent that hidden immunity idols, you know, back when they were being used in moderation, added what I would consider to be an undeniably better element to the way the game was functioning. I think this in-game currency, whatever it, I'm guessing they won't be called Garnets or Probst Bucks, but whatever they are ultimately called, I do think this is something that if used well, you know, if this goes well, and I'm hopeful that this is a cast that can take full advantage, this could be something that is here to stay for Survivor, and that could be a very good thing.
Yeah, to me, this lands somewhere between you can't always get what you wish for and you can't always get what you want and be careful what you wish for, basically, because I'm glad that we finally get to see this. I'm surprised and rather confused as to why we're seeing it now of all times. Like, this is something which maybe could not carry an entire season by itself, but it could at least be the centerpiece for, you know, if they're lacking other ideas, this could be an interesting thing to build a season around and go from there. But instead, they're lumping it in with the one season where it's barely going to have any room to breathe. And I imagine that if it does end up being remembered for this season, it's probably going to be for negative reasons. It's going to be because it allowed a player who already had a boatload of advantages or whatever within the game to cement their lead even further, or that there's going to be some reason to remember it, which I'm not sure is going to be a good one.
Yeah, I flagged this tweet up in one of the previous podcasts where we discussed this twist, but this is essentially the page that I am on, and this comes from @ParallelloDan on Twitter. He says, if it can curb the amount of scavenger hunts, artificially limit the number of idols based on currency, and function like Garnets in the genius, I don't see it being that terrible. It's all about the implementation. So yeah, it's fucked. And that is my concern as well, which is on paper, I think this could be, as I said, a transcendent kind of twist that could go on to define the next kind of iteration of what Survivor becomes as a game, although I don't know, based on how every other twist I've seen them implement for the last several years, I can have virtually any faith in this actually being done in a manner that is going to be even close to optimal.
Yeah, they no longer have the benefit of the doubt if they ever once did.
Right. And I do think the possible backlash to this could take a little while into the season, just because I'm guessing this will be very interesting early on when it's basic items and everyone can afford stuff or whatever. But I am guessing this will build up to come end game time. The people on Edge of Extinction are just constantly either buying or gifting or whatever all of the best advantages to the underdog within the season. And this may be the twist that officially puts us over the point that I genuinely think we may be heading towards, where in modern Survivor, the new goal is to play to be the underdog at Final Four. Do not be the person running the show. Be the underdog at Final Four. And that is where you will have the most win equity.
Yeah, and that's how it's worked for a long time in terms of favoritism, fan reception, and so on a show like Big Brother. And when you talk about the Grodnerization of Survivor, I think this is part and parcel of that, honestly.
Right, exactly. So hopeful that this could be good, but definitely not as optimistic as I would be under different circumstances. But this remains unclear in terms of how this is all going to go. We talked about it in terms of maybe this is like Mario Party, where you visit Toad's shop and an idol just always costs 20 probes bucks or whatever. I think I would probably rather have it be a kind of shifting scale of what costs what amount, where potentially it's like a bid each time for only one idol is going in. Like, I don't know how in love I am with the idea that everyone can keep solid track of who has how much money and how much things are going to cost down the line.
That's why we had to boot off the professions from the screen to make room for this person has one idol and two extra votes and 95 probe sparks. You got to make room for that real estate on the screen somehow. But even if they are able to get that price setting right eventually, it's going to take some time, I imagine. It's hard for anyone to get it right the first time, and I don't have too much faith in them to get it right the first time either. So that's why it's even more surprising to me that this is the first time. Like, if this twist had been in place on the upcoming season 39 or at some point in the past, then you could sell it even better as, for season 40, we're bringing back not only some of your favorite winners from seasons past, but also some of your favorite twists and favorite challenges and so on. And really, we are really going to have a celebration of Survivor and Survivor's history. Instead, you're introducing yet another twist, which, if you miscalibrate it somehow, could end up having this dramatically warping effect on the whole season. And even if this one doesn't fall prey to that, any of the others could. And it only takes one of those to drag the season away from where you want it to be and be a distraction. So I wish I could be more optimistic about this than I am, and I hope to look back on this in a few months and say that I was wrong and it all worked out for the best, but I'm not so sure at this stage.
Yeah, I mean, I remember a few weeks ago at this point, we did, before we knew about any of the twists that would actually be in play over on the Patreon feed, we did a podcast called the Survivor 40 Anthology of Interest, where we just gauged the what if factor of if various things would potentially be in play. And I feel like this is essentially, Dom, the Anthology of Disinterest, going over all the twists that we are not excited to see actually being implemented here. And I really did try to spin the in-game currency setup as something that could be very good, because I absolutely believe that is the case. But in thinking once again about Mario Party, it reminded me of a thought I had recently when hearing Survivor described as Calvin Ball by Stephen Fishback, which I do believe is accurate for the first 33 or 35 days or so, where Calvin Ball, for anyone unfamiliar, is from Calvin and Hobbes, where essentially it's a game where the rules are just made up as they go along. But I feel like the Calvin Ball era of Survivor, while absolutely accurate through most of the game, I actually think we are in the Mario Party era of Survivor, Dom, where essentially whatever happens for the first 34, 35 days, once we get down to the last few turns, the computer is going to decide who it wants to see win, and everything is going to break in that person's favor. And for everyone else, it becomes about preventing the Rick Devens person from winning.
Yeah, and my recent Mario Party experiences bear all of that out.
How did you do it, Mario? Are you someone who wins at Mario Party at Podcast House? Because I am not.
Occasionally, but even when I do, I don't feel like I had any agency of the situation whatsoever.
Yeah, I feel like it's always you and Taryn just smashing me at the minigames.
As it should be, really.
Yeah. I used to think I was good at Mario Party until I played against actually capable people. But I mean, my experience with Mario Party, it was our go-to game back many, many years ago at this point when I still drank alcohol. We were all just wasted playing Mario Party, and I guess playing it's you and Taryn is a bit of a different story.
As Boss and Robert say, welcome to the big league.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so in-game currency, I think a very high variance twist, to say the least. I think this has a virtually uncapped kind of ceiling if it is implemented well, but could absolutely go down as the thing that just sullied this season the same way Edge of Extinction did 38.
Yeah, and if it isn't this, it's probably going to be something else. So strap in and prepare for a bumpy ride.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's find out what else it could possibly be, Dom. I can't imagine that this next news item is going to have a massive impact on how the game ends up being played, but we are in for a $2 million first prize this time around. Now, granted, everyone in this cast has already won $1 million at the very least, and you know, even after taxes, that's still a decent number. But I don't know who among this group wouldn't be very interested in the idea of adding $2 million on to that. So does this move the needle at all for you, Dom, knowing that there is going to be double the first place prize up for grabs?
I love it. I don't think there's really anything to criticize about this. I don't necessarily know if this is a good use of their money. I don't think there is a single viewer who will be enticed or repulsed by the prospect of the prize money going up. But this is something which you've said should happen maybe for a long time. You know, if you compare the $1 million that Richard Hatch and kept perhaps too much of back in 2000 versus $1 million in 2019 adjusted for inflation and everything else, it's really not the same prize anymore. So I'm glad that for a season of this importance to the show, that they are reflecting that in the amount of money they're giving away. And whoever ends up winning this will officially have the highest prize winnings total from Survivor, right?
Yeah, no matter who wins, they will have, I mean, I don't know about what Boston Rob's appearance fee was. Maybe right. Maybe he's the all-time winner, no matter how this goes. But yeah, so at least.
If Boston Rob is the first boot on the season, he's still making out like a bandit.
Oh, no, absolutely. No question about it. I would say no matter where Boston Rob finishes, he is virtually guaranteed to be the second biggest winner of this season.
And honestly, I respect his hustle in guaranteeing himself an appearance in every single Survivor episode in two back-to-back seasons, regardless of results.
I don't think that was so much him hustling to make that happen. I think it was Jeff Probst now being in charge of casting and all the things of that nature and feeling like Boston Rob was a necessary crutch, and they were willing to say, all right, name your price. We will blank check for you to come back for the next 28 episodes.
Okay, well, respect for Boston Rob for knowing where his bread is buttered and making sure that that relationship is still going strong.
Respect for Boston Rob for, as far as I can tell, just bending them over to make sure he got every single thing he ever could have asked for.
Right, maybe that's a better example of his skill as Survivor than anything he's actually done within the game of Survivor is over the past decade.
As I think I said this on a previous podcast, the fact that this is the new reality, that Rob has gotten whatever King's ransom I'm sure he required to spend this much time back on Survivor with absolutely nothing to prove and four young girls at home, may be more impressive to me than anything he did in Redemption Island.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my concern about the $2 million for first place is I don't even know if this has ever been like publicly acknowledged or whatever, but there were increased payouts in the original Survivor All-Stars as well for every single position and to a meaningful degree. And what we saw as a result is the Big Toms and Jenna's Lewis of the world, and Rupert were wholly unwilling to mix things up during the mid game because they were guaranteed and to them obviously life-changing money if they just stayed the course. And I, as down as I am with first place getting $2 million, so be it. I would hope and not be optimistic that this is the case, but I think it would be much better for the game if every other prize stays exactly the same. I think the scenario we should want to avoid, having seen how increased prizes played out the first time, is someone, even a former winner, deciding that getting whatever the new number is, 250,000 maybe, for second place every single time is worth it compared to making a big move at final eight or final nine with all of this chaos going on.
Yeah, this is your new prize structure. $2 million, zero, 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 right. just down the line, right? We're not adding to the prize. We're just redistributing it a little bit. We're spreading the wealth around.
We're doing it the American way. With a winner gets $2 million. It's a winner-take-all economy here, Dom.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think truly one of the only things modern Big Brother continues to do right is not give prize money just for making it deep. You must make the top two to get any prize money beyond the jury stipend. And frankly, the jury stipend seems like that may now be too much. Over the last few years, and I think this has a lot more to do with them casting nothing but unemployed people, so many people in the cast play Big Brother just to make it to the jury so they can lock in the $8,000 or whatever, because that is life-changing money to 90% of the people who play Big Brother.
Yeah, or you look at a show like The Bachelor, where they're hoping to make it far, not to be paid a stipend, but to be paid in Instagram followers, because that pays much more than any stipend could ever hope to.
Right, exactly. So that would be my concern. I'm all about maximizing the incentive to come in exactly first place. I just think if we're also adding incentive to let it ride, knowing you're going to come in second and get a nice chunk of change for that as well. That could be a very bad thing, but I certainly don't know in either direction what the other payouts are going to look like. That would just be my only concern about the $2 million first place prize. Dom, the other twist that we have found out about, if we even want to call it a twist, news has broken that every single person in the cast will get not just one loved one, but it sounds like several loved ones for everyone in the main game and on Edge of Extinction. And to me, this is exactly what I'm talking about in terms of this exists because Boston Rob insisted that he get his daughters out there no matter what.
Right, and you can't have a specific boss and rob rule with all of this. You have to extend the same favor to everyone else. So even if this came about for arguably the wrong reasons, I'm actually really happy about this. I maybe deviate from a lot of the people who think about the show the way that we do, in that I love the family visit. I love seeing all their loved ones come out there. And not just because those loved ones often seem more interesting than their castaways who are on the island themselves, but just I like seeing those relationships and what the families of these people are actually like. So the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, this makes me feel better about the prospect of getting 90-minute episodes, just because how could they possibly introduce us to like 80 people over the course of one loved one's challenge without a 90-minute episode?
Well, you get the same imbalance edit that you would get normally, where, like, you know, like, Yul's brother or whatever gets this CP5 edit, and then Yul's half-sister's cousin gets a UTR1 edit, and that's just the natural way of things.
I'm guessing all of the Mariano girls are going to be getting OTTP?
Yes.
Am I using that correctly?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. The question I have is, as I alluded to, for my money, this exists to get all of the Mariano girls on TV, and I am guessing Boston Rob and, by extension, Amber are going to go into day one knowing that no matter what happens, we're going to get to see our daughters out here. Do you feel like that could potentially be an advantage, going in knowing and potentially being the only people who know everyone's going to get their loved one, and it's going to be multiple people?
How would that possibly be an advantage?
I mean, releasing that information at an optimal time could be useful. I don't have an exact circumstance drawn up, but given how much we've seen making the family visit play into things, Boston Rob dropping the bomb that, hey, don't even sweat it, everyone's going to get to see a bunch of their family no matter how it goes, you know, releasing that information at a critical time could swing things.
So this could be the extended version of the Ron Clark principle, where if you get to see literally your entire family, then the family visit has more importance than it would otherwise.
Right. I mean, especially, I would guess, in the case of like a Boston Rob who knows this is going to be an uphill battle no matter how it goes. So I'm going to try to appreciate the little things along the way. I feel like for that type of player, that could be compelling.
Yeah. So do we know exactly how this is going to work in terms of, is it just going to be everybody who reaches a certain cutoff, or does everyone get this regardless of how they do? So the Edge of Extinction people also will get. So when Yul gets sent to Edge of Extinction en route to his marvelous comeback run, is he going to get to see his entire family, or how does this work?
I believe so. I believe it is the case that everyone, including those on Edge of Extinction, get to see their family. And the reason for that is because by the time the family visit rolls around, Boston Rob is probably going to be on Edge of Extinction, but we can't not have him seeing his family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I guess I don't share your overwhelming optimism about you know, getting to find out more about Yule's second cousin or whatever. I'm not someone who is a particularly big fan of the family visit in general on Survivor at this point. It really just seems like the same thing over and over and over. And I will happily grant that in an all-winter season, especially in cases where we've seen those people before or heard about them before at other family visits or in people's original episodes their first times around, that is far less likely to be the case. But to me,
that's what makes it more exciting, Colin, is character development. They are now returning players in their own right. You know,
I mean, Laura Bonham,
Thurston Clark is going to be back for a second season. Who could have predicted that?
Hey, fellow British guy, how excited are you for that?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I forget what I was going to say, but long story. Oh, it just feels...
Laura Bonham's name is in there somewhere.
Oh, so yes, okay, that's what it was. Yeah. Is Laura Bonham, over Rupert's first three seasons, probably got more screen time than plenty of actual people who played Survivor. Like, we're covering Guatemala over on the Patreon feed. You can't possibly tell me that Laura Bonham wasn't getting more screen time just as a loved one than those three younger women who got voted out early.
I don't know if this is the best advertisement for that Guatemala rewatch series, but rest assured we talk about Laura Bonham somewhere in there too. So if that's your thing, be sure to subscribe now, only $5 a month, and get all the Laura Bonham talk you need.
Yeah, I assume it's everyone's homepage by now, but that would be patreon.com/DomandColin. But just in general on the loved ones, when it is new players in particular, to me, after all these years, even Jeff Probst is at the point where I believe it was last season. He said, all right, time for the loved ones to come out. Cue the music. And he literally said that out on the beach. Like, he is aware of, everyone knows exactly how this segment is going to go. Gavin's going to have this big emotional moment with his wife. People are going to see their parents or whatever. You know, Victoria is going to see her dad. And I will happily grant that for the average viewer, that is a much more meaningful moment. But for, like, I know casual Anna is an enormous fan of the loved ones, and she says, you know, it makes her cry every single time. And for me, though, it just feels like exactly the same thing over and over. And when I hear Jeff Probst say, cue the music, to me, that is almost him acknowledging that concept.
Yeah, I don't know if the casuals and of the world really remember those relationships after everything is said and done. Like, if we did a Sporkle quiz on the loved ones of the most recent five seasons, I don't know who would be getting a high score on that. But just as a concept, it seems to be a reliable winner for the show. And it is for me, too. And what I say goes, Colin. So okay. That's that.
I think, did any of them have, like, a hot dad? Because that would be the one she would remember. Like, Victoria's dad.
I don't know about Victoria's dad in particular. I'm sure there are some hot dads out there.
All right. Well, Victoria and her dad.
If you're into that kind of thing, I'm sure there are some hot mums too. You know, there's plenty to go around.
All right. So, Dom, what else do we know at this hour, if anything, that you wanted to comment on while we're in here?
We should check that Redmond hasn't spoiled yet another twist in the past 75 minutes or so. But other than that, I think we're in the clear.
All right, good. So that, I believe, will wrap us up for today. I'm sure whenever more news breaks, we will be back. And, of course, plenty of other Survivor content, Survivor 40 content, I'm sure, coming very quickly. Until then, you can be following Dom on Twitter @DomHRV. I am on Twitter @ColinStone. As mentioned, you can find our weekly bonus episodes, new episodes every Saturday, over at patreon.com/DomandColin. And you can email the show, DomandColin@gmail.com. Thank you guys so much for making it this far. We will talk to you soon. Take care, everybody.